Thanks to Feels for supporting FilmSack. Feels has me feeling my best every day, and it can help you too. Become a member today by going to feels.com/filmsack, and you'll get 50% off your first order with free shipping.
Oh, we've got tonight.
Who's got tomorrow?
Who needs tomorrow?
We've got
Let's make it last,
oh, there it
girl.
Is.
Let's find a way.
You're like my living lyrics.com. I don't know lyrics unless.
2130, day 547. Unscheduled course correction due at 2200. Pre-correction check. Rotation axis plus 3 degrees. Nitrous oxide pressure, 4100, rising to 5000. Quad jet C and D on pre-select. Rotor ignition sequence beginning in 3-0. Thrust align reactors on standby. The Mystery Monster.
This is FilmSack. Oh, sure.
Oh, hold on. That's no good. That was all quiet. There we go. There it is. Oh, okay. Sheesh. Need to check all the buttons before you start, Scott. Hey, everybody. Welcome to FilmSack. This is FilmSack, mining the very depths of film entertainment for all mankind. What a great way to start 2020. My name is Scott Johnson. I'm joined today by Brian When Vincent Penetrated Maximilian Dunaway.
Okay. Oh, hi. This week on FilmSack, we dig deep into Disney's darkest hole. I mean, we really get in there and dig around for nuggets of... Oh, hold on a minute. I'm getting an ESP. Uh-huh. Right. Yeah, I'll tell them. Okay, guys. I just got a brain call from everyone's favorite 1970s era sci-fi robot, old One Ball Bob. It appears he survived after all. However, he assimilated with Ernest Borgnine and now identifies as No Balls Borg Bob. Let that one burn into your soul for a minute while you struggle to imagine a sweaty robot with a mustache. All right. Does anybody need like a 2-minute overture they want to play? Anybody got one of those? A 2-minute overture?
Might
help pass the time. No. All right. Oh, wait. I'm getting another ESP. It's from Vincent. Uh-huh. Right. Yeah. I'll tell him. Vincent says he's sorry. He's sorry he asked all of you lovely film sackers to endure this movie, and he promises to never do it again. Nah, I'm kidding. He started quoting some long-deaf philosopher, and I remembered that this ESP and I could just sever that whole thing. Click! Well, I hope you enjoyed the view from the sidecar of my imagination. Now here's that 2-minute overture I promised. No? You guys prefer commercials and 20 trailers before your movie? Fine. And that's what you'll get.
Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh. You know, there's a reason you're known for your intros here on the show. That stuff's really quality, high quality stuff.
I love intro making.
It's fun.
It makes
you're a good writer.
Thing in the universe.
You're a good writer. If there's ever like, you know, Letterman or somebody starts a new show and they're like, we need someone to do these weird intros, I think they should hire you.
Totally. He has a new show.
But no pressure on anyone else. Let's start next with Randy. Hey, it's that guy from Jackie Brown, Jordan.
Aloha, Scott. Brian. Hi. Did I ever tell you boys about the time I owned and operated the most successful chain of automaton dealerships in all of Alberta?
No, do tell.
True story.
Yeah.
Everyone wants to operate their own small army of automatons, and that money is being in the supplier. You too are going to do great in this business, so long as you follow my 3 vital rules. Number 1, train the automatons to do things that fun people do, like cheerleaders, like stack up in a pyramid. That'll come in real handy when your customer is stuck alone with them for 20 years. Mm. Number 2, don't tell anyone about how automatons can just vanish. I know you think that's a selling point, but I'm telling you, keep that a secret because you're going to love the look on Ernest Borgnine's face when he gets fooled. Number 3, train your customers on how to attach the masks to the slaves, I mean automatons, in such a way that the masks can't easily be dislodged. Come on, boys. This should be obvious.
Those dead people would have sneezed. Those masks would have just fallen off right then and there.
Right. Yeah, there weren't much on those things. Would like to have seen more of those guys, not just the one dude. But anyway, With us finally, Brian. Sorry, Brian. Hey, we should make a Star Wars Ibit.
Got 50 space credits.
2237, day one, Oscar robot log. Oscar here, fresh off the assembly line. Oscar stands for Outer Space Collection and Repair, and I'm really excited to get to work. My friend Vincent, who is with me all throughout Robot Academy, is going off to explore on the Palomino, and I hope everything goes well for him. 2237, day 35, Oscar robot log. I was working on the hull of the SS Valiant, took a little bit of a hit from a stray meteor, and it seemed to have an effect on my voice modulator. I'll have to have that checked out the next time I'm in spaceport. 2237, day 93, Oscar robot log. Voice modulation chip still hasn't gotten fixed, and now I seem to be suffering the same fate as most robots my age. Slipping into hillbilly talk. Kind of hard to convince the captain that the main thruster valve needs to be replaced when I sound like a second-rate Yosemite Sam. Oh well, hopefully we get to a cotton-picking spaceport soon so I can get this fixed. Yeehaw!
Love it.
You are, you do a quality Slim Man. Pickens, I'm going to just say.
Hello, right. Somebody who hates hillbilly humor.
Yeah.
I would have liked a little more Dr. Strangelove of
riding the missile. Sure. Yeah.
I just want to advise you, you should finish off that whole joke with him getting it fixed. And then sounding like he's supposed to sound again. I waited this whole movie.
Yeah, rule of threes.
Oh, no, I hear you. I agree. I'm saying I waited this whole movie for that voice to change somehow. Right. I don't know why, but I just couldn't. Fixed,
and then he sounds like Anthony Daniels.
Right.
Yeah, what a weird choice. It's like a. It's the things that were clearly for kids in this movie were the robots, the little bumbly ones, and then everything else scared the shit out of me when I was a kid. So we should probably raise a hands here. Who saw this before?
I saw this in the theaters as a 10-year-old kid or 9-year-old kid or whatever it was, and have not seen it since.
Okay, same.
Yeah. Never saw it.
Never saw it before. Okay. Brian?
I've never heard of it. I'm not convinced that this movie actually existed until Disney Plus.
No idea it existed.
It's kind of mind-blowing to me that whole thing where you discover something that other people know about. Mm-hmm. And you've lived a whole life. And how did this really have impact on the people around me? And I just have no idea. Thank you, Disney Plus. Mm-hmm. It's really awesome to be able to sort of dive into these things, their own little niche. But I wasn't prepared for the dark side of this thing. Like I have thought a lot about what age a kid, my kid is ready for whatever, for Force Awakens or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I just saw, it's a Disney movie. It's rated PG. And I just sat with my child and watched it. And, I could not help but see it through his eyes. There are parts of this movie where my kid, in his own language, was saying WTF.
Yeah.
It the evisceration of Norman Bates?
Yeah.
Some of it. But, mainly the end. My kid really, his biggest outburst was at the end where he just did not, he couldn't grasp what they were trying to say.
Oh, yeah. There was a 50-year-old... 50-year-old in my living room that said exactly the same thing because I'd forgotten about that stupid. What? I won't even say it's a stupid ending. It's a lack of an ending.
Yeah, there's not much there. I mean, you're supposed to be left with the feeling that, they traversed to the other side and now they've seen it and they're heading toward all this new exploration and discovery. Like they actually got to the end game that the weird psycho scientist was aiming for, but they did it, heroically and without...
Oh. I didn't get that at all. I figured Ryan Emilian was in hell and everybody else went to heaven. And
that was one implication, right?
I guess. I hadn't thought of that. Didn't thought of that. Yeah. I thought they had. I really did think it was they made it through the hole and they're now on their way to what's on the other side. And they just leave it at that.
This will be a good discussion point.
Yeah, right.
They flew down the angel, led them down what looked like
the mirrored pretty white hallway. Yeah.
Right. So, yeah.
I just thought that was just psycho. Way to go I thought that was supposed to be just like weird imagery, though, done away. Like a
right.
You know,
but the Ryan Amelie is like sitting on a rock thing above a bunch of fire with a bunch of skeleton people in hoods.
Yeah.
I mean that does not feel like he's gone anywhere else.
Dante's. And Borgnine announces it right at the Alpha front. Six.
Right. I don't know what that was meant to be, but that was. Yeah, I mean, I get the heaven and hell thing now that you say it. I guess it just never occurred to me.
Yeah, Borgnine kind of, you know, introduced the idea early on, like going, what in Dante's Inferno is this? You know, this, however many circles of hell you want to call this black hole.
Right.
Well, with all of them. You know, I know it's we're talking about the ending really early on the show, but I guess it's appropriate time to tell you that I read an article on the Hollywood Reporter about this. This article came in at the end of last year because of Disney Plus, and I decided to wait and not read the article until after I saw the movie so that everything would kind of cement in. But
and it's huge. It's like a huge novella. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's fantastic too. It's a really good article. But apparently they what they adapted this from didn't have an ending. The last sentence of the book is they enter the black hole, or they go through the black hole, ... and that's the end of the book.
Wow.
So they said, well, do we do that with our movie, or do we put something in there? And apparently they had an even more
interesting,
a more esoteric
reality
version of the ending that didn't get used.
Yeah,
I'm trying to think if I can find it really quickly, but I guess not. But basically they were gonna go into the Sistine Chapel, start in the Eye of Adam, pull back, and then there was going to be the shot of the Sistine Chapel and the creation of Adam.
Oh, wow.
That would have been cool.
Wow.
It would have been just as, you know, just as, huh?
Yeah.
There's, right. What they used.
Yeah. There's no doubt that they had their eyes on a sequel. Like most films, like the vast majority, you end a film in a way that if for some reason half a billion people go see it, you can make a sequel. And this was true. I don't understand why they just didn't leave it completely unknown. Like they all get sucked into the black hole. The end. We don't know what happens to them.
I think that would have pissed people off even more than the goober ending that they ended up doing. Goober like, ending. You know, like, all right, Thanos snaps his fingers. End of movie. Yeah. See you in a year.
This was 1979. I mean, we weren't really hip to the sequel scene yet, right?
Not in the way we are now. Yeah.
Yeah, because we hadn't gotten Empire Strikes Back. We knew about Empire Strikes Back, but it hadn't come out yet.
Yeah, the sequels up to this point was like Disney's own Herbie series and things like that.
Yeah,
like,
James Bond movies, or you know, movies that had self-contained stories, not like the serials that had the cliffhanger endings that were from the, you know, 50s and 60s.
Sure, but this one, the ending in this one, I think needed to give, like, a book is what, it's well enough for a book to say, and they entered the hole, and then that's it, right? Because then your imagination fills in the rest. I think in a movie, you have all this conflict, characters you build up, even if they're not great, whatever, and then if you don't do something with it, at least experience the hole.
Because if you don't, then the people who died, the good people who died for no reason. They just died earlier than everybody else.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, that's how I'd look at it. I mean, I'd rather die in the hole than Anthony Perkins style, which brings me to my big point of the black hole, Disney's black hole. When this thing came out, it was Disney's first PG movie. They'd never made a film that wasn't G. So this was a huge deal. It was stuff sort of aimed at adults, a little slightly more adult conversations happening. The robots were there to sort of soften all of that. But when I saw it as a 9 or 10 year old in theaters, the only memory that stuck, honestly, I don't remember jack poopy about it, except that there's a black hole involved and that robot sliced up Anthony Perkins. And that's my only memory.
So you remember that? Yeah. That feels like something you'd remember. I don't know why I didn't remember that, because it really caught me off guard on this viewing. I'm like, oh my God, this is a Disney film, even PG. And you know, Anthony Perkins is getting eviscerated by this robot. Yeah. Holy crap.
They don't really show any blood or guts or anything, but it's so implied.
Anthony Perkins' face said it all.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah, it did.
Big time. You saw and his that, dental work, his mouth open so wide.
from that article, by the way, him holding up the book with all the notes and all of his information was also improvised on the set.
Oh,
it wasn't written into the script, which is brilliant. It's like,
brilliant.
Here, maybe this will stop you, but oh my God, it's my life's work. Oh God, here's my heart.
He should have said, Mother, I'm coming, or something like that. Right. But yeah,
Mother wouldn't hurt a fly.
That was a scene that just was seared into my memory, and I remembered it. Yeah. It scared the crap out of me when I was a kid, and it's the only thing I've retained. I remembered the movie.
Maximilian, and what's really funny is the only other thing I remembered from the film was the opening computer graphics of the green lines that then formed the black hole. That apparently had more of an impact on me than Perkins' death, than...
That graphic was pretty innovative. Nobody was really doing that stuff at the time. Yeah, that was high-end graphics, or high-end computer graphics at the time. But yeah,
and you notice nowhere does it say a Disney film. The only thing it says, it's a Buena Vista film.
Correct.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
We've
talked about the end, but let's talk about the beginning for just a second.
Ooh,
sure.
Yeah.
Let's talk about that. Let's talk about the fact that I turned on my Disney Plus and I hadn't turned up my volume on my computer. And so I'm sitting there looking at a black screen going, did it start?
Yeah.
What's going on right now? And I know there's like a 2-minute overture or something, which you don't see in films anymore, but was pretty out of vogue even then. But it was a nice reminder, because when I was watching it and listening to it, I was like, oh, this is very nice. I enjoyed this. Mm-hmm. I forgot people used to come in, you know, movies to start when they started. And Randy talks about this all the time. Movies used to start when they started. Mm-hmm. And so they would have an overture, so they'd have an opportunity for people to come in, kind of get in the mood,
mm-hmm.
kind
of sit down, get ready, talk to each other, say hello to your neighbor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right.
It was a much more civil exchange back in the day.
I'm glad we're a movie goer in the 70s, because I know you won't be pulling out a phone or talking to anybody during the picture.
Your feet aren't going to be up. You're not going to be pushing on the back of my chair.
Exactly.
Like,
yeah.
Right. I really appreciate with reservable seating and an app that tells me about how long the trailers are going to be, I can pick out the exact time I want to arrive at the movies.
Yeah, right.
And it's like 21 minutes after the alleged start time. There's
an app that'll tell you how long the trailers are going to be before a particular movie, or do you just, I mean, it's always going to be right around 20 minutes, right?
No, I'm talking about like going on to social media and seeing what my friends who went to see it at this theater have
experienced. I'm sure it has to be theater by theater, because they all run different.
20 minutes though does feel like it's about the right amount. And that's a really good thing. I like going every once in a while, making sure that I do see all the trailers, because they change them up enough that I do want to see them. And for a while, because the only way I would watch the Rise of Skywalker trailer was in a theater. I did not want to watch it on my TV or on my computer screen. We were going and seeing every movie with the trailers for a while until I saw that one.
I don't mind it, except for all our local chains here are putting commercials between the trailers now.
Yeah, that's not right. That feels like such a bad thing.
I hate it so much. I really hate it. And it makes everything take longer. I mean, I understand that they need to, whatever, you know, running theaters and chains and stuff is not the business it used to be, and you got to get it through concessions and other stuff, but man, just too much.
But it feels like such a break of the agreement between movie shower and movie goer. You know, we have an agreement. You show your commercials while people are sitting down for a few minutes before the thing. You show that stupid M&M. I loved it at the beginning, but man, the M&M needs to update that stupid, no, it's an envelope. You know, they need to get rid of that thing and give us a new one.
Yeah.
And then once the time starts and you've told us that, you know, there's popcorn and Coke products in the lobby, and somehow these people have glassware that they're drinking Cokes out of. I have a paper cup.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, do you guys have the guilt trip commercial before y'all's? Do you have the one where
one is that?
One that we get here at our theater. I don't know if it's nationwide or not, but it's always about, this is obnoxious. And there's a guy going, man, he's like, he's talking when the movie's about to start. And then there's like another guy, he's got like a hoodie on and he's like, he's videotaping the screen. It's like, this is illegal. And then at the very end of it, there is, it's like after all these stupid things, they have somebody sucking on a bong, a water bong.
And I'm like, what the?
Oh, South Carolina. Your movie commercials are so much different from ours.
Awesome. I would love for you guys to be able to see the one that I see. I wasn't sure if it was nationwide or not.
When you described the guilt trip commercial, I could have sworn you were going to say it was the Jennifer Aniston, Marlo Thomas begging for money for St. Jude's Hospital.
No, we get those too, but this
is something different.
Ours are filled with local crap, and it's because the chain is local. It's this Larry H. Miller chain, and it's a great chain as far as quality and seats and all that stuff. Awesome. But they really cram it with, like, so imagine this, a trailer for something like Knives Out. Amazing trailer. Looks great. Can't wait to see it. Boom, bam, bam. Big thing on the screen. And then it cuts to, here at ZCMI Bank, we're grateful for your local, it's some local freaking saving, what do we call that? Community, what's it called?
What's that called?
There's a name for a bank that isn't a big bank. It's a...
You're looking for a credit union.
But it's all like local stuff like that, or a guy that makes computers like downtown. Like, it's just, it's horrific. It'd be better if they were like national commercials, maybe, because the quality would be better.
The quality,
yeah. And then they roll in, here's a Star Wars trailer. No. Oh, and now here's another commercial for whatever. Ugh.
I don't even want national commercials. Basically, that would be the thing that would make me start coming to the movies 20 minutes late, is if they started doing commercials interspersed with.
Well, that's what we're doing now. We don't. I mean, we're reserving seats anyway, so there's no advantage to being there early, and we're just not going. Well, I am fine watching those trailers on my computer screen if this is the other option. So f those guys. I might just be a little fired up because of a YouTube problem, but yeah.
The real frustrating thing is when you're trying to watch a movie and then get to a dinner reservation afterward and figure out when to make that reservation for. Like, it's ridiculous. Like, you should just add on 2 hours or something, because you don't want to ever cut it close. There's nothing worse than being like, oh wow, I'm already 10 minutes past my reservation time for dinner. This movie's not over. I'm going to have to sprint out of here as soon as the credits start.
Hey, you know how I'm old? We have our dinner before we see a 7 o'clock movie.
Hey, you know how I'm poor? I gotta choose one or the other.
All right. lately, I just don't do eat. We just do it both at home. That's how I get around it.
I'm watching Rise of Skywalker right now.
Yeah,
at home,
right this second. Yeah.
Ford's Ferrari. I'm watching at home with Tom Cruise and Matt Damon.
That's right.
Back to the overture thing.
The black hole. Oh, yeah.
Do you feel like, I feel like Disney Plus shouldn't, I know it's not including the movie as it was presented to viewers in 1979, but I feel like they shouldn't include it on their streaming service, because there are parents who are going to sit down to watch this with their kids, hit the button, play. It's like, oh, well, something's wrong with the TV screen. Turn it off.
Here's what I think. Play it, because the score in this movie may be its best thing.
Oh, this is true.
And here's what they should do. Disney Plus should just put something on screen, or a message that says, this overture played in theaters in 1980. Feel free to skip 2 minutes in if you'd like to jump straight to the movie or enjoy this music. Like, just give somebody an indication, because there's...
You know what? That'd be better.
Yeah.
Because my Disney Plus, it would like buffer for a second before the overture and then right after the overture. So I don't know if they're working on a way to skip intro.
Oh, maybe.
But it seemed... Because I did it twice. I was like, well, that's weird. And I did it twice, and I don't know if it's because suddenly there was imagery on there instead of being nothing. Maybe it was trying to adjust.
Mine was blank the whole time. I decided to watch it all because I just wanted to see what they were going to do, and it never did anything.
Yeah, and you didn't always, and that was an interesting, it was interesting how they presented it, because it almost seemed like it was an artistic choice. It's like, oh, I get it, because it's darkness and blackness, and that's how, you know, nothing escapes, but this sound is escaping. Oh, that's great. And then I thought, then I watched the rest of the movie, and I was like, No, it wasn't bad.
I'm really torn. Like, on the one hand, I like the technology a lot. I like it. I'm telling you, the opening sequence for Mindhunter is very good. You only need to see it a couple times. Mm-hmm. The skip button is great.
It is.
You do not need to see that on every episode of Mindhunter.
It's the right innovation. You know what else was like that? Freaking Daredevil. It had a beautiful intro,
Other hand, Mandalorian is a celebration of art. in a way that I almost wish they didn't give you the option to skip it. It's like if you end an episode of Mandalorian and walk away without looking at all the concept art that's over the credits, you're missing part of the show.
Oh, if you're not watching the credits, you're a crazy person, because that art is amazing.
It's so gorgeous. I want. Yeah. I'm sure there'll be a book that they'll sell that has all of the concept art from Mandalorian, a little coffee table book, and I'm so tempted to buy it.
Oh, I'd buy it. I'd get it.
I would definitely buy a couple of those as prints to hang on the wall. Like, yeah. A couple of them are just
they're amazing.
Despite this movie being about a black hole that sucks everything in, we keep losing orbit on this film because I want to tell you guys about my child that I ordered from Disney. Yeah, I ordered.
Yeah. Okay.
Ordered that. Yeah. $$30.
The child. Gotcha.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, for the plushie. Yeah.
Wow. See, I ordered
it was just
the...
like after your kid is in the Lost and Found at Magic Kingdom for 3 weeks, then they just put it on the Disney site and you can.
I want to actually reset to pre-production because it's too easy and simplified for us to just say Disney's answer to Star Wars. This film was in production for a while. And they kind of knew Star Wars was being made, but like it goes back to the early 70s. Mm-hmm. It runs around as a different script that's always getting rewritten. There's definitely interest in it before suddenly everybody needs to be making a space adventure movie. Mm-hmm. And that's fascinating because like if you look at it in that vein, there's really actually not a lot in here that's just a blatant ripoff. There's definitely the hope that they're going to make toys. It's definitely a Disney movie, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. But it's actually not. Like, it's not Star Wars. That's for sure. It's like,
right.
Like, the seeds of this other thing make it all the way into this movie.
It's a little like a year later you get Tron. It's a bit like that, you know? Like, it's a different thing. It's still definitely Disney, but you're like, oh, this is them branching. This is them trying something else. And not just sticking to, you know, Apple Dumpling Gang and Herbie sequels. Like they're going for something else here in the 70s.
I'm telling you, Mr. Limpet was a Disney film.
the art at the beginning and end of Mandalorian is something that's on my mind because I watched this movie. The screens, the paintings hanging behind people in so many shots beautiful. In this movie are fan freaking tastic. Like there's nothing comes close. I don't know what to compare that to. There's shots where I'm just like, wow, someone painted a wall that's 100 feet wide.
Yeah, the paintings were awesome. I was constantly amazed at Vincent and Bob that I'm like, I kept looking for a, like, okay, where's the strings? Because this is pretty convincing. They're really stable and it's pretty freaking impressive for 1979 for them to have a floating robot. I mean, they wouldn't even think of that. Psh, come on.
Yeah,
that's smart stuff.
Now. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, right. You need to make a speeder. I always like how in Star Wars in The Mandalorian or in the cartoon, I'm watching Rebels right now. I love how all the crates are self-hovering crates. You know, if you need to move some product around, it's just a thing you push through the air, kind of like a carbonite coffin thing.
Right.
I love that.
Go back
sort of stuff.
And look at the land speeder in Star Wars before Lucas came back and did all his touch-ups. I mean, it's kind of rough, and this is amazing to me. I thought they did an amazing job here.
They did, but the reason that something like this didn't take off the way that Star Wars did, and not that they were going for the same thing, but part of it is kind of a mystery to me because I don't know why 3PO and R2 work so well, and these two robots do not. As far as personalities and stuff like that.
Yeah, R2's not pretentious, but CP3O is, but he's the butt. I couldn't say it.
Say it one more time. The, you still C-P-3-O. Have it.
Sipitopio.
Sipitopio.
Start
with C3.
Sipito.
Sipito. So Sipito, that golden droid, he's kind of the butt of the joke.
Yeah.
Here, this guy's a know-it-all. You know, Bob and Vincent, they're kind of, you know, they're kind of know-it-alls, and they kind of think they're the best. And it's just kind of great.
Would we have Lightning McQueen and Mater if we didn't have Vincent Bob?
Right,
it's a great question. But those kind of, I mean, for a certain generation, those work. I mean, but you never liked the hillbilly humor at all.
Nope.
And I don't really like the cable guy dude because he's not really real. He fakes that whole thing, and it drives me crazy. Yeah. If he was real, I'd be like, oh, okay, well, this is him.
I don't think I would. I don't think that would even be enough. It's like, you choose to, I mean, that's kind of what he's doing, but you know, even if you're doing the hillbilly comedy things, like you're aware that you sound like this and you choose to do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you're not, it's not like he's being real. Like if you went down deep south and found somebody with a real thick accent who lives out in the nowhere.
Sure.
That isn't them being a cartoon of themselves. No, that's just them being themselves. Exactly. Get Larry the Cable exactly. Guy is a big fat cartoon of himself. And it's right. You're right. It's bad. But the idea that, hey, what if one of the robots was old and beat up? What if we got an uncredited, by the way, Slim Pickens to interact with an uncredited Roddy McDowall? Neither of those guys got credits, which annoys me.
Like, are we supposed to believe that the Bob robot came off the assembly line with that voice? Or, I mean, I played around with this in my intro, but is that just something that happens?
Yeah, no, your intro is great.
By the way, but after getting beat up a couple of times, I would think you would have a Slim Pickens voice too, right?
I spent the whole movie thinking that was a defect. I've never seen this. I've never heard of this. I just figured, oh, this guy's all busted up. That's why his voice is also busted up.
This film had a lot of older writers, direct. I mean, it seemed like everybody was much older in this film, in the making of this film, as opposed to something like Star Wars, where you had Lucas heading everything and everybody was very young except for a few really talented people that Lucas pulled to really guide everybody. But he was really looking for a high energy youth, right? Mm-hmm. And this one felt like it was mostly like people like remember how Westerns were? Mm-hmm. Kind of like that. It felt a little bit more old.
Well, here's good support for what you're saying. This was regarded as the last big special effects production to be made under the quote-unquote old studio system. So all the elaborate special effects, they were created within Disney Studio and not farmed out to outside special effects companies, which became the norm after Star Wars really started that. But everything since then, you didn't keep it all within your own fences. You'd sub out everybody subs out everything. Like the exception of Pixar, where that sort of thing, you can't really sub it out. But even then, I think they sub some stuff out, some finishing work and sound stuff, a few other things. But the idea that you would make any of your effects outside of your own studio walls was unheard of up to a certain point. And this is like considered to be, according to the trivia and other things I read, one of the last, if not the last movie to do that. So a lot of old stuff.
Come on. I mean, the overture right away says, this is old Hollywood, right?
Yeah, and they even brought the special effects head of special effects, whatever he was called then, the director of special effects. He was retired and was like a veteran of like ancient, like the Leagues Under the Sea movie and I can't think of any others, but old stuff. And they brought him out because they thought, oh, we really need a good special effects guy. So this guy gets out of retirement to do a very old school effects treatment, which is a lot of matte paintings and a lot of miniatures. And I got to say, some of it is rad. I think, as improbable as a giant meteor rolling through the center of your freaking tube ship is, it looked really cool. And when they were like silhouetted against it, that stuff, I totally bought that. That looked great.
Some people give Vincent's robot design a hard time, but I kind of find it charming.
I hate it.
I don't mind the robot design. Yeah, I mean, I think that's kind of, for what we were doing in the late 70s.
Yeah.
I think Star Wars had set a new standard by now, like even though it was only a couple years earlier. The big stupid white eyes with black dot pupils. What are we doing? What is that?
Oh, well, yeah.
That's Furby, terrible. I mean, I think Maximilian's cool and still to even now a little bit intimidating. It's
How
a little
confusing
janky
was
now,
that
but.
To have an actor acting across from a robot that was called Max, or they both were called Maximilian, right? I mean, it was like the actor was Maximilian and then the robot's name was in the movie.
Well, the IMDb trivia claims that they named the robot before that dude was brought on, because before him they had considered Harry Andrews, Peter Cushing, Kurt Jurgens.
Oh, I thought you said the robot's name was gonna be
no, the other way around.
Getting better.
Christopher Lee almost had this role, I guess. Max von Sydow, like all the people you would like, imagine all the psycho faced character actors of that era, and they pretty much were all in this trivia, but they named that robot before Maximilian
if they brought you on to be the heavy in a movie, Scott, and said, and this is your evil robot companion, Scott,
right,
you would be like, whoa.
Yeah, dude.
Okay,
that would be weird. I mean, The thing is, too, we're being asked to trust IMDb trivia, which we know sometimes cannot be trusted. So
what was Ernest Borgnine doing?
Yeah.
I mean, come on. What was he doing in
this film? What happened? Can someone remind me? I'm sorry if I totally blinked when this happened. Did he die in this?
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. Harry Booth.
He kind of turned into an everyman for himself, like, I'm getting out of here. Got $50. And then he took the Palomino and then got basically zinged by the gravity of the black hole and knocked back into the big spaceship.
Okay, they just
but who knows? That's the reason why I wanted to know, because I'm like, okay, we didn't actually see him die.
Yeah, there's a little chick in the bucket going on there with him.
Right.
Just a little. Oh, I mean, that thing exploded.
Absolutely. Yeah. But he was so close to the black hole. I mean, maybe he got sucked in.
Yeah, couldn't he get sucked in there and go down the angel hallway?
Yeah, and things don't always happen like we think they would in the black hole. And I thought maybe, you know, a little merging of Bob and the Borgnine.
What was the name you gave it at the top of the show when you merged?
Reinemillion. When Reinhard joins with Maximilian.
No, you called it something else.
No, I called him Borg Bob.
Yeah,
gotcha. Okay.
Yeah, because he had one ball before, but then he merged with Borgnine.
One ball.
Who has no balls because he ran. Yeah, and so now I'm explaining my joke. No balls.
Also, okay, so the robots that were like their version of stormtroopers, the red ones.
Mm-hmm.
Those things are terrible designs because, first of all, they walk like Tinker Toys and they have no articulation to their elbows or their freaking knees. And they walk like, you know, slow zombies. And then their aim is atrocious. My gosh, the robots are
stormtroopers look like, right? Made stormtroopers like sharpshooters. Yeah, it was bad.
That was really bad. I just kept thinking, I don't care how many of those you have. Maybe if you had a million of them, someone's going to hit the broadside of a barn. But what a shitty, like, enforcement. Right. Crew of robots. They were terrible.
I hate to keep bringing up the Mandalorian, but I know also everyone loved the sequence at the end, the beginning of the last episode where the two stormtroopers,
the two scout troopers,
keep shooting at a bottle and missing.
Sorry, I had to play
but
that
I one, there's something in there. There's this explanation that their equipment is faulty and it's like mass produced guns that don't shoot straight. And I really like that. I think that's important to cling to so that you can get past this thing where people are shooting laser bullets and missing.
Right.
I agree. I think that they did that really well in The Mandalorian. In this particular case, it's just, I can't take those things seriously. It's like, what are they even here for? I assume they have a decent grip because they keep holding people. The black one was kind of cool.
No, the grip's good looking. He holds that guy right there. Yeah. That can't be the explanation.
What was his name? Oh, he played Jason in Friday the 13th, by the way. The guy that played the, was it Stars? Star was his name?
Oh, Star, really? Tom Mika?
Yes, something to that
the
effect.
The young guy, dude. The young...
Really?
Yeah, the
pilot dude.
Mm-hmm. The one that was second in command until in the movie, they said that he was the little Vincent guy.
Did,
said he
did
was
Jason
gonna,
Lives. Oh,
yeah, he did. Jason Lives.
Or
he must be a big, tall, looming human.
Looming human.
Yeah, looming human. This the trivia, by the way. This seems not true to me, but let's just throw it out there. John Hughes, it says, famed director, writer John Hughes, created the green grid sequence that Ibbot likes so much that appears in the opening titles.
It would be great if it was John Hughes, like Pretty in Pink, but Breakfast Club John Hughes.
That's what this says. That's what this is saying.
You think it really is, though, or just like somebody named John Hughes, but...
They're claiming it's the 16 Candles John Hughes.
I don't know.
Now, the thing
is... Who never did any other computer graphics thing ever whatsoever.
Ever in his life ever, right.
But, right. Didn't he?
It also has the long... It
great
is,
if the Breakfast Club opened up with like a three-dimensional rendering, like you're zooming in on lines of the school, Shermer High School.
So I'm going to look at his production credits real quick here.
Yeah.
Miscellaneous crew, right? Would that be it?
Yeah, right.
Okay. Nope, nothing there. Nothing in actor. Yeah. Nothing in... director. Nope. Producer. Nope. It's special thanks, maybe. Let's see. Let's go back to the 70s.
Thanks. Thanks a lot.
Nope. How about self? Nope. Archive footage? Nope. I'm going to call BS on that one. I don't think John Hughes had shit all to do with your green thing. But I do know that it is the longest computer sequence in a film, a computer-generated sequence in a film up to that point. Nobody had done anything like that. And that's kind of rad. I like stuff like that.
Really cool.
Yeah. I think it got beat pretty quick, though, because Star Trek, the motion picture, had that weird planet.
Right. Genesis. Right.
Thing. Whatever it was.
Well, it was Wrath of Khan that had the Genesis three-dimensional rendering planet.
Yeah, which is like two years after this. Maybe that was the one I'm thinking of. Mm-hmm. And that took
now the motion picture came out just a month apart from this film.
Oh, really? What a bad year it was for science.
I know, right? Well, wasn't a bad year. Wasn't. We also had Alien that year, right?
The first thing. Oh, right.
Year before,
which is streaming. By the way,
Alien 1 is streaming.
Yep.
Why are we even still talking?
I know. What are we doing watching the black hole?
We should watch Alien.
I don't know. This is my question for this whole thing. I'm not here to say this is a uniformly bad movie. Like I say, I'm of two minds about every little thing in it. Mm-hmm. There's things that everything. Just saying, the acting, I love it, I hate it. The music, I love it, but I hate it. Mm, like the music, I'm sorry, there are times when this music is so effusive. It's so over the top. I don't know what it's doing in this movie at times. You know what I'm saying? Like mm-hmm. every little thing. Mm-hmm. And so my ultimate final, you know, like synopsis of my experience is I love this movie and I hate this movie. You mm-hmm. know, it's like mm-hmm. what's going on?
Well, and
what makes it perfect for films.
Yeah, that's the other thing. Part of it too is like, you know, when we find a movie that connects to our childhood in some way, in the case of Ibn and I anyway, that's always fun to look at later and say, all right, well, how does this hold up? What do we remember from it? Why did I have a giant coloring book from this movie? I had that for a while. like they were trying to do merchandise. The Star Wars model had gone crazy with action figures. They tried to sell action figures for this. I don't think it went well.
Nobody wants a sweaty Ernest Borgnine. Nobody wants that.
No, nobody wants that. But it's just got so many pieces that are so perfect for FilmSack. But you know what? Those were dark times for Disney. It wasn't a great time. They weren't making huge money. Mm-hmm. They were out of big sort of franchisey hits. They didn't have. Their animation stuff was in a bad place. What was it? Black Cauldron's about all we had around then. And that's a bad movie. That's not a good. That's the worst thing they ever made, in my opinion. So they were just having it rough. They're not the Disney of today. So it's fun to see that. And it's also fun to see them on their big premiere thing now, where Disney's the biggest company on the planet. It's fun to see them, that I can go into there and go, oh, Black Hole, Tron 1. You know, Fox and the Hound, like ancient shit that was during the dark times.
Who has a love hate with Tron as well?
I love Tron. I don't have a hate with it at all. I love Tron.
Oh, yeah. I love hate it because it's just looking at those early special effects, or some parts of it are amazing. Other parts I'm like, oh my gosh.
Well, they were really ahead of their time and now way behind their time. Right. But, I made myself watch Tron Uprising the other day again, because I love the visuals of that. I love the soundtrack of that.
I love the visuals.
Soundtrack's amazing. The acting's horrendous, and the story is dumb. But, you know, I love Tron, and I want more Tron. So I'm going to make a recommendation for the listeners. If you're like me and you wish there was more good Tron in the world, there is one place you can get it. Sadly, it was only a single season, but Tron Uprising. No, sorry. Mm. Tron Uprising? Yeah.
Yeah.
Tron Uprising is an animated series that ran on the Disney Channel right around 10 years ago, or maybe a little less, maybe 2012 or something. 2012. It only ran for a season. It had an all-star cast. Lance Hendrickson was the bad guy in it. He was great. Had Frodo, what's his name, in it. Can't think of his name. Dippy shit, McGoopy Boop.
That's the one. That's the guy.
Anyway, he's in it. A whole bunch of people you know and you've heard a million times, and it's very cool. It just
and it's Mandalorian in length. It's 10 episodes.
Of what?
Of that show.
Oh, Tron of that Uprising. Show. Oh, I thought you said something about Mandalorian. What'd you say?
I said it's Mandalorian length.
Oh, Mandalorian length. Yeah. Sorry. Yeah. Except it just didn't get picked up again, and it's a real bummer it didn't, because it's very, very cool and it's worth your watching. But I am a permanent Tron fan, and I always will be, and I'm just waiting for them to do it, take another stab at it, do something cool again.
Right.
You got the service now.
Idea. I mean, going into the arcade world. I mean, that's such a fun idea.
Yeah, getting sucked into data and being in the data, and what does that construct look like? And programs are entities that have, you know, they have feelings. and there's just something about that idea. I love that. It's almost like, you know, the movies like Inner Space or something where you're getting sucked into a human body and you're tiny. It's not, right. It's kind of like that to me, except it's a, you know, you're being reduced to just data. But the idea that in, Michael Sheen's in that too. He's very good. Mm-hmm. I just love Tron. And to me, Black Hole was the precursor, was the beginning of them trying to branch out to stuff like Tron. And I'm glad they did. So, you know, I feel like we owe the Black Hole something, a little bit of love.
Scott, did I convince you to watch the movie Downsizing?
No, maybe. I think Ibbot also told me. Ibbot also told me it's the Matt Damon deal. Right. Yeah, I haven't seen it. Did you guys like it?
I liked it.
I'm not saying I liked it. I'm saying it comes across my mind all the time.
Mm.
And there needs to be a word phrase for those kinds of movies where I'm not saying you should watch it because it's great. I'm saying you should watch it because I want you to have the same mental disease I do where it keeps crossing your mind.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I am a sucker for I love concepts where stuff is there's a scene at the very end of the first Men in Black where we're zooming out of the universe or zooming out of our solar system. We zoom out of the Earth, then our solar system, then our galaxy, then multiple galaxies, then even more clusters of galaxies. And then eventually we pull out and it's just this ball where it's all contained. And this ball is like a marble these aliens are playing with. And the marble's the size of a marble to them, but to us, it's infinity, right? I love that idea so much that even when it's portrayed badly, I enjoy getting in there. Like Futurama plays around with it a lot. I love that.
Is that more exciting than a black hole?
I mean, kind of. But also the concept of a black hole that if you went, because we're so afraid to go into one because we believe the physics will destroy everything that gets sucked into it, right?
Right.
But what if it isn't? What if it's like the abyss plays with this? What if we could go lower than we've ever gone because Ed Harris can drink, you know, oxygen goo instead of air. And then Ed Harris is suddenly now in the deepest of depths and it's a whole alien space. That's a great thing to play with in science fiction. I love that. So they have me there as well. I like black holes.
So that was going to be your example of something that crosses your mind, but that didn't necessarily come from something great. Like the overall movie is not great.
Oh no!
But that concept is on your mind all the time.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. Yeah,
I'm telling you, Downsizing has that in a couple of places, in ways I just can't let go of. And I'm like, I almost wonder if Downsizing will just be, it will eventually get its own little cult following, and it'll be a TV series or something.
Yeah, it might. Ibbot also recommended it on a Recommendals, I think. Or something.
Yeah, I said that the first half of the movie is really good and it's very, very fun. The second half is like, all right, yeah, we're just kind of playing around with the continuation of this story. Mm. But it from the previews, it felt like the first half of the movie was going to be the whole movie, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I get that. But I'm down for movies where the concept extends over the quality of the execution. I do like that. Once in a while, concept and execution are perfectly in sync. And the example I would give is 2015's Mad Max Fury Road. where they nail both sides. But there are times where it's just like, wow, your concept, or you know, like in Tron's case, it just doesn't hold up over time. Like Dunaway says, the visuals and stuff. But man, when I was a kid, all I wanted was a nice cold glass of Tron water. Mm. Remember that when they got up to the edge of the Tron River and there's like digital water in there? That water looks so good to me. I wanted to drink it. Tron water. Mm. Anyway, Black Hole. So back to Black Hole. I don't know what else to say about this movie. Let's see. Oh, there were nothing grossed me out. I couldn't find anything.
It was kind of a sterile set, right? I mean, there wasn't any body. I mean, you might have been grossed out when they pulled the mask off the humans, and they're all like,
that feels so tame these days. I mean, even Perkins' death, kind of tame compared to what you know, the Tarantino film, everybody would be splattered with his guts.
Right. Yep, that's true. We haven't talked about Robert Forrester being in this.
Yeah,
no, Robert Forster. Yeah, I mean, you briefly mentioned at the beginning about the guy from Tarantino, Jackie Brown.
Oh, Jackie Brown.
And also from, you know, El Camino, the guy who helps out.
He was the same age in this film as he was in Jackie Brown.
Well, he was only 15 years later, which is a weird thing to think about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's further. He was closer to Black Hole than he is to El Camino in Jackie Brown.
You're right. Or even the last season of Breaking Bad, for that matter, when he was in that. Right. Like his that's what's freaking me out. Okay. Black Hole, 1980. Jackie Brown, 96. So what's that? 15 years? That's just not a big deal. That's
crazy.
Yeah. That's just insane to me that that's how short the time was between Black Hole and Jackie Brown, but from Jackie Brown to us, way longer than that.
Weird.
I don't like it. Really bugs me.
I feel like I'm in a black hole.
Another example, I always use this as my middle ground, is the first big Pearl Jam album, 10.
Oh, yeah.
That first Pearl Jam album comes out about, you know, what, 12, 13 years after the Black Hole.
Yeah.
And is coming up on 20 years old.
Yeah.
Now. Mm-hmm. What?
You know, dude. Wow. We should use the Black Hole as our timestamp for all comparisons.
PBH.
Yeah. Yeah. Forget about BC, AC, not AC.
Right.
What am I trying to BCAC? AD.
Nirvana is significantly older to us right now than the Black Hole was to Nirvana.
Yeah. That's so weird to think of. I don't like that one bit. No, I don't.
I mean, Matrix, I felt was like a really good watermark, but like a bookmark to say, oh, pre-Matrix, post-Matrix. Mm-hmm. But Black Hole.
Yeah, but now you're 21 years after the Matrix.
Yeah.
21 years. You know what? We're closer to the Matrix was closer to the Black Hole
than we are
to the Matrix. That is stupid dumb. Yeah. I can't believe that.
That's funny. Wow.
Anyway, Robert Forster, I think, is pretty good as your kind of Han Solo type, your hard driving captain dude. And I want to give them some cred for the scene where he saves the girl who's getting her face shot with animated lightning.
When he
went diving in there.
To the aluminum foil hat? I don't think you can do that.
No.
The bathing cap? The aluminum foil bathing cap?
No. Illuminati confirmed.
Right.
Hey, you guys, do you experience stress or have anxiety or chronic pain or have trouble sleeping at least once a week? Well, you're not alone. Many of us do. I know I have. Didn't sleep great last night, in fact. Let's talk about Feels. Feels. F-E-A-L-S. Feels is a premium CBD delivered directly to your doorstep. You don't want to know what they do? Well, they make you feel better. Actually, I don't know. Maybe it's just because I'm getting older or whatever, but it seems like going to the medicine cabinet has mixed results these days. Little CBD oil, though. It's like the thing that makes me feel better now. Feels naturally helps me reduce stress, anxiety, pain, and sleeplessness. It's easy to take, too. Place a few drops of Feels under your tongue and feel the difference within minutes. Are you new to it? Are you new to CBD? Feels offers a free CBD hotline and text message support to help guide your personal experience. That's really important to me that they do that. Feels works naturally to help you feel better. Definitely works for me that way. There's no high, hangover, or addiction. Feels has me feeling my very best every day, and it can help you as well. I was very skeptical of such things until I tried Feels, and now I'm not. It worked for me. Join the Feels community to get Feels delivered to your door every month. You'll save money on every order, and you can pause or cancel any time. So, become a member today by going to feels.com/filmsack and you'll get 50% off your first order with free shipping. That's feals.com/filmsack to become a member and get 50% automatically taken off your first order with free shipping. feals.com/filmsack. These guys are great. You'll like them. I like them. Feels. I won't even say it was a good scene. I'm saying it was a fun, stupid moment of like heroism, Han Solo type, you know, jumping over the counter, shooting dudes with your two little laser prong guns.
Pew, pew.
And I remember thinking those guns were cool. And I'd argue with my friends. They're like, oh, no, Star Wars blasters are cooler. I don't know. These have two lasers on them. Those are pretty cool.
And then, we'll just see. Let's wait 40 years and see what we think then.
Yeah. And some nerd would say, I like Star Trek guns because they only stun you if you want to. They have options on them. I remember that kid. Anyway.
Well, speaking of Yvette Mimieu, she was a replacement, like a last minute replacement. Actress. Let's see.
It might that makes more sense to me because in one part of the script says, and then take the young lady down to the thing. And I'm like, hey, that lady's like 38.
Well, she looks older because she's got the blonde fro. But originally they had Jennifer O'Neill, who was in the Summer 42. Actually, originally they wanted Sigourney Weaver, like a pre-alien Sigourney Weaver. And they said, no, we don't want. They basically turned her down because of her name. They said, oh, my God, with a name like Sigourney Weaver, we don't want her.
Whatever, Borgnine.
Really? And then Borgnine.
And then they were going to do Jennifer O'Neill, who had this long blonde hair, and they kept cutting it and cutting it and cutting it. And finally they, you know, gotten it short and said, okay, you're our woman. And then she drove home from that session, got into a car accident on Sunset Boulevard and ended up in the hospital. So they recast
her hair.
And yeah, after they cut her hair, like she just had blonde hair, cut it short because they didn't want they thought it would be too obvious in the floating in space scenes if her hair didn't move.
Oh yeah.
Right.
So then they recast and got Yvette Mimieu, who also had long blonde hair. And then they just cut her hair, made it short and curly and said, okay, I guess we're set.
Gave her the short and curlies. But just before we get a ton of emails, Alien came out the year before 1979, so technically Sigourney Weaver already had done
it. I thought this came out in 1979 as well. We've been saying 80, but I thought this was...
No, it's coming in 79.
I thought it was 80. Not 80?
No, huh? Yeah, 1979.
Oh, same year.
But it came out real late 79, like December.
Oh, look at that. You're right. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Oh, December 18th. Yeah. Or, I'm sorry, December 21st in the U.S., 18th in the United States.
Yeah, this says, you know what it is? It's up top, it says 79. Down below, there's a reference to 1980, and I don't know why. This happens sometimes. Gotcha.
Yeah.
I don't like that.
I saw this in 1980.
Listen, IMDb, we require exactness in our website.
But they film movies before they release them, so it still would have been a pre-alien Sigourney Weaver.
Yeah, that's right, true. Right. And she hadn't really done... shit all before that, I don't think.
No.
Yeah. She was great in Alien. We got to watch Alien.
Yeah.
Because Alien's got, what's his name? He was in Top Gun. He was in charge of stuff in Top Gun.
Sure. Scarrett. Right. Tom Scarrett.
Oh, yeah.
And Alien understood, for the same year, also understood how space worked, how you couldn't be out in space without some sort of suit.
Well,
whatever, man.
Well, they could... Okay, hold on. I actually have a question about that.
Yeah.
Who's the first person that flew into the hole? Was that Maximilian?
Maximilian, right? Well, yeah. Well,
whatever his name is.
It was a pretty big ship kind of going all in at once. So it's really hard to say who went in. The first person we saw the results of was.
So it's Hans Reinhardt.
Yeah, Hans Reinhardt was the person we saw the first.
So that so maybe you guys are right. Maybe this whole thing is he's dead the minute he hits space. And then he's in hell after that. Dead.
And so he kind of imagines the merging with Maximilian. Right.
Maybe.
Well, see, he was supposed to be already dead, right? Because he got crushed by that screen. And then he just laid there with his eyes dead looking. I assume that's what that meant. And then he awoke on the other side, right? It wasn't that.
So it was a hell thing then. Maybe you guys are right about the heaven and hell scenario, I think. Never occurred to me. Right. But now after we've sussed this out, I think you're right. Mm-hmm.
And I just want to get a confirmation because Alien, Aliens, Alien 3, and Alien Resurrection are all streaming on HBO now. I want to sit and just watch them all.
But they're not streaming on Netflix or something like that.
Surely you all have the.
Well, I have it. That's true. Yeah.
Because I have the complete box set. Surely you guys do.
Yeah, but and it's,
I do have it, and don't call me Shirley.
Sure.
I don't think that people. You're right. None of these are. Yeah, I was thinking
you know
it was
what?
Like
if
Netflix.
If we decide to sack Alien, I'll watch it again. I'm seriously like today I'm gonna watch all these movies.
I love the Alien movies. I really do. Yeah. All the way up through four. I like four for dumb reasons, and I think three is a cool space prison movie. And
it's a great example of a series where every movie is a different kind of movie.
Yeah.
You know, Alien is a horror film. Aliens is kind of like a war film almost. You
action
know, it's
movie,
a,
yeah.
Action movie. Alien 3 is kind of a suspense thriller, and Alien 4 is kind of like your sci-fi.
I will watch any psychological alien movie anytime, and including Prometheus, the extended groups, and everything. I'll watch them all.
Prometheus really bummed me out, but I'd watch it again. It's fine.
I'd watch every one of them and have done so.
Prometheus and what's the other one? Alien Covenant.
Alien Covenant. Covenant. Yeah.
Those are not as good as they could be, but they are not the worst thing I ever saw. So
they're elevated by Fassbender, I think.
Yeah, Fassbender's great, and also having Ridley Scott back is a good catch. Mm-hmm. Although, again, you could argue that he's not doing his best work, but whatever. But Aliens. Although I'm the first four movies, I love them for their own reasons. I'm mad at them for other reasons. And this is a possible thing to do at once, everybody at home. You're all sitting there listening to us say this, and you're going, whatever, dude. The only good movies are the first two. No, no, no. Whatever you want to watch is what you like. Just do that. Go see Alien 3 if you like it. Don't if you don't. It's got problems. It's not perfect. I hate how it starts because what it does to characters from the previous film.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
That's bad. But
it is bad.
In a way, it's also kind of great that they had the guts to do it, and plus it's David Fincher's first big directorial thing, and there's reasons to be happy about Alien 3. I guess what I'm saying is go watch Aliens. Those are great.
I forgot that Covenant had Danny McBride.
Oh yeah.
I totally forgot it did.
Yeah, he's in. Thank goodness they didn't play him as like the Ernest Borgnine character here. He actually plays pretty heroic.
He plays pretty much the Danny McBride.
Right, right.
Character that Danny McBride always plays, right? I mean,
if we can also make
you're dumb. You're dumb.
If we can make 2020 the year that we finally see the original Predator, that would be really nice too. We just need to do that. It's not currently streaming on common services. It's on that Fubo business, but with a minute it shows up on anything secondary or whatever. We just need to get that done. The show is 10 years old. Damn it, we need to get Schwarzenegger's Predator. I need to see Carl Weathers waving his bloody arm in the air. I need to see.
You didn't watch The Mandalorian?
I need to hear somebody yell, go get to the chopper.
To the
I need
chopper.
It. Yeah. Like, this is the movie. I love Predator. It's one of those movies I'll always think fondly of. So I need to see if I'm wrong. Have I forgotten? Is it bad? Does it not hold up? I don't know. But we got to do it. We have to make it happen.
Yeah. Agreed.
All right. We got some clips here. Do you guys want to hear those?
Let's do the clips.
Do you guys notice we never even talked about Charlie because he's the most wasted use of a character ever? The other white guy in the group. He just, what a waste. What does Charlie do? Nothing. He argues with Vincent. That's it.
Right. And see, more felt like the dynamic felt more like what you would see in Lost in Space. That these characters reminded me more of that.
Yeah, that's a good comparison, actually. This is very Lost in Space, actually.
It is.
That being the original Lost in Space, like the show. All right, here comes the sun. No, here comes some clips. These are these are some clips that I gathered from the thing. Here's our first look at Mr. I Got 50 Bucks, or Do You Have 50 Bucks?
My God, right out of Dante's Inferno.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. I love his response. Yes.
Yes. Confirmed. Confirmed. I was in Psycho. I know. All right. Here's a bad actor lady.
That ship just disappeared. They've never been seen again.
Okay. Great. I don't like her very much. She's not a great actress. Here's Robert Forrester. I put the late Robert Forrester because poor went out for him. That guy was awesome. Here's what he says.
Gravity's close to maximum. We can afford one pass, and then we're going to have to get the hell out.
Jackie, I can't get your bail bond unless you come out here.
It's actually pretty good.
I miss that guy. He's great.
Yeah, just passed away, what, like 3 months ago or something?
Yeah, right after the premiere, like a day after the premiere, El Camino. That was such a bummer. Yeah. He was so good in that. Ugh. And he was only 69. That's not old enough. Be older. Here's the... Oh, I wrote, with your what now?
Either we have a malfunction here or there's too much interference on the outside. See if you can get through to Vincent with your ESP.
And I went, ESP?
ESP?
Right. And then he called it your ESP. Like,
you're right.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, yeah, because she was the only one who had ESP with Vincent.
Your ESP. And they didn't... They just hand-waved that right away, didn't they?
It really did. Like,
well, yeah. Well, here's your ESP. What? Wait, hold on. What?
Isn't ESP... So it's extrasensory perception.
Right.
That, I guess, could extend to artificial constructs like a robot? I guess.
Think it would just be something different then. It wouldn't be...
And why does she have it? Yeah. And why can she do it with robots?
Yeah. Yeah.
It was real hard watching this for the first time now after so many years of Deanna Troi. It was hard. Yeah. I watched this and I'm just like, oh, come on.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That was a little weird. We're going to give them a D on that one.
D for ESP.
Yeah. Here's, I don't know what this is. Oh, this is him. I guess this is him saying, why are you so horrible? I don't know, but this is Charlie. So Charlie has a moment.
Stay at your post, Charlie.
What the hell are you made of?
What are you made of? It's a weird thing to say.
Shoe leather.
Cologne and shoe leather. I smell great. All right, here's Vincent as a dick.
Vincent, were you programmed to bug me?
No, sir, to educate you.
Ooh, snap.
Roddy McDowell laying it down.
Because you're dumb. I don't know if I made that clear.
I, for a hot minute, thought that the voice was not Roddy McDowell, but in fact, the guy who was played Kit on Knight Rider.
John Forsythe.
John Forsythe. I thought that was him, but no, I would have been wrong. All right, this sound freaked me out. Here you go. It's the old spinny hands.
The bees.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I don't like it. I wonder if they used bee sounds. They sound a lot like bees.
Yeah, so I'm hearing violins and someone in a microphone going.
That's how they did it in the old days, Randy.
Yep.
Gather around the microphone. All right, here's a mystery monster.
A mystery monster.
All right, there's that. This Goon Squad comment.
Goon Squad. Nice.
Nice.
You guys are the Goon Squad.
You are very funny people with the Goon Squad comment. That guy.
I get it.
I totally get it. All right, here's got $50 being super impressed with the space. Here you go.
Quite a layout. I said it's quite a layout you got here.
That is such a World War II guy era guy thing to say, isn't it?
Right. Quite a layout.
That's a hell of a layout you got.
It really is funny, yeah.
I mean, this was so like late in his career. I think it was pre... what's the show that we watched an episode of? The with the helicopter?
Blue Thunder?
No, the other one.
Yeah, Blue Thunder.
It's not Blue Thunder. Airwolf. Airwolf, yeah.
That's right.
This is pre-Airwolf, but post all his war movies and the stuff that made him famous.
Right. Right.
And I feel a little bad for him.
I feel like this is the same character from Airwolf. I feel like it's exactly...
Is that his
heaven?
It's
a flat-out Disney like formula, right? Young hotshot pilot, kid, you know, fresh out of the academy, old handyman... Working Ernest Borgnine looking dude and a woman.
Yeah.
Right.
And a woman who has ESP has special power.
And when you watch the show, it was always like, did you guys were always disappointed that it took so long for the helicopter to come out? It was always like 40 minutes into the show before.
Yeah.
And then it would just be footage you'd already seen.
Yeah. Yeah. The exact same footage.
One shot they have of it coming out.
Oh, it's such
30 minutes of them in a log cabin bitching about the, you know, the world. And then.
So,
10 minutes of that.
Ibit, you made something pop in my head, and I think it's now I'm kind of freaking out about it. This crew is basically the Fantastic Four, if you think about it.
Oh, yeah.
Kind of. Yeah, right. I mean, Ernest Borgnine's the pilot thing, and Perkins is Mr. Fantastic.
Yeah.
Johnny Storm is the other dude. And,
yeah, totally. And Sue. They're Sue with her power.
And the robot from that series. Remember, they had a robot.
Herbie. Did they have a robot? Herbie?
Yeah. Herbie.
I mean, Robert, we're leaving Robert Forster, who I guess is Dr. Doom in this scenario. But
well, Dr. Doom in this was Maximilian the Robot, I think.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, with his dumb.
Kind of, yeah.
Right. What a dumb robot. It seemed cool when I was a kid. It's so dumb now. Anyway, here's
Wait. I just want to hold on that a second. It did genuinely seem cool to you when you were a kid.
Oh yeah,
Maximilian. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
I still think it looks cool.
I don't think it looks cool at all now. I think it's one of the coolest.
I mean, I think it's the cool one of the coolest things in the movie.
Mm. Right. Maybe it's the only reason why they still keep this movie around. I mean, otherwise it would just have put it in the vault.
I came out of watching this still wanting to 3D print a Maximilian. You know.
Well, that I'd be into.
Yeah. Thing for my desk.
That'd be a cool little memento thing to have, but I don't think he's as nearly as menacing as he was when I was a kid. When I was 9, he just seemed like the baddest, meanest thing ever.
Well, I mean, so did Cylons.
That's true. And he was very Cylon. Kind of, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And very, you know, they were kind of, they had a little bit of a Vader thing going on with the Stormtrooper-y red guys. Little bit in the face, you know. It's hard. Mm-hmm. It must have been hard back then to not, have everybody post-Star Wars not to go the Star Wars route with their styles and stuff, or have laser swords and things. Anyway, are you interested in black? What's this one? Oh, are you interested in black holes? I love this line. This is great.
Are you interested in black holes?
I'm going to use that for other stuff.
Right.
It's great.
Toots.
Vincent's always butting in.
It's only dinner.
Said the spider to the fly.
All right, you little piece of shit. Said the spider to the fly.
He was programmed to communicate with humans or to relate with them by quoting other humans or something.
Yeah,
It was annoying.
It was all quotes. A penny saved is a penny earned.
Yeah.
Bed in the hand is worth two in the bush.
Yes. The early bird gets the worm. It's like, shut up. Shut up, you little round little shit. By the way, Brian's putting in the chat, in our chat here, a version of a 3D printed Maximilian. That would be very cool, actually.
It is kind of cool looking. I mean, you know.
Well, yeah. Like my complaint is that he's sort of like uniformly red. I'm like, oh, well, that's perfect for 3D printing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Great. Yeah.
Right. You could just touch him up a little. But also he's my problem with these robots, everything that's robotic in this movie, is that they have no articulation. So they're really not a big threat. Like, just dodge out of the way of that damn thing. It's slow.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. Well, I mean, his arms come forward and have the little spinny things, but I don't know what the little two little handles that he has on his knees coming out of the side of his knees are for.
Is there Pez dispensers? I do like the idea of of Mr. Psycho over there running around the room frantically trying to get away from that.
Oh, right. Please save me from Maximilian. Please.
Rick, save me.
All right. Go ahead, Matt.
A very Tron looking design, though. I know we talked about Tron, but did we talk about how Maximilian looks like he's straight out of Tron?
Yeah, he looks like a combination of the guards in Tron and those weird ships that were like two big legs floating.
Yeah, I wonder if they reused the models or something.
Maybe. I mean, I doubt it, but there may have been some inspiration carry over there. But I mean, that is one, by the way, one of the things that really holds up about Tron is that kind of design stuff is very cool. It still looks cool. Mm-hmm. It's the people in their dumb little hats that look dumb and their jumpsuits, but the rest of that stuff's great. There is a very hot blonde in the sequel, or in the Tron, whatever the hell it's
Legacy.
Called. Yeah, Legacy. Whew, man, I don't know who she is. She's one of the ones that just gets him dressed for his first disc fighting game. And there's like three or four models that all walk up to him while the Daft Punk music's playing, and they're like helping him get his outfit on or whatever, and she is just smoking. I have no idea who she is.
I'm going to have to watch that again, apparently. Yeah,
she just is. She eats that scene up because you're just like, okay, one of these people is way hotter. All right, here's a robot conversation that annoyed me.
STAR, Special Troops Arms Regiment, Reinhardt's prototype for the sentry robots. He was number one until Reinhardt built Maximilian.
Yeah, he's a son of a bitch.
Yeah.
Brian's favorite.
it just doesn't make any sense.
Yep. All right, here's me later at lunch today.
Ah, fresh mushroom soup.
Okay, if it is your mushroom soup. Soup. I like some of the soup
made from mold.
Yes.
I love having my mushroom soup right on the event horizon.
I love people that don't say soup, but instead say soup. So it's a soup, fresh soup.
Well, he also didn't
soup.
Say mushroom. He said mushel, I think. Mushel soup.
Fresh mushroom soup.
Maybe. Mussel soup. Maybe it was mussels. Maybe it was eating the people.
Yeah.
But it was mushels.
Yeah.
Whatever the oles are, they're mushed.
Yeah, they're mushed oles. All right, here's I got a clip from Brian Ibbett's prom night. Now, this is a great one because this is just literally audio that you said this to your girl or to your date. Before before the night really got going. Like, she was in your car and this was you. So
I assume so, yeah.
Yeah, this okay. is what you said.
Do you mean to tell me that there's actually a human body under that clothing?
Wow.
You want to see?
You want to see? Got $50?
I'll pull back.
Yeah, right. That's actually what was followed that line.
Yeah. All right, here's what I'd like to call an almost barf. This is a sound the lady made when she saw the zombie guy underneath the mask. So he took the mask off, and we saw the zombie face, and then she made this noise. That's pretty good.
That poor guy, good thing he had a lobotomy. That would have been a hurtful.
Yeah. Yeah.
You've scarred me, woman.
You don't want to hurt his feelings. Poor guy.
Mm-hmm. Aww.
All right, here's speaking of sad, let's do some sad time with the robots.
We have to go.
No. No, I can't make it. My hover stabilization's gone. My main circuit's blown. And both backups are failing.
You can make it.
They have two backups?
Both backups are failing.
Yeah.
I hate his voice so much. I didn't realize. Honestly, watching this, I knew I disliked it.
Yeah.
Once you hear it without the visuals. Like
this, yeah.
I hate it. Slim Pickens. Why did they do that?
Slim Pickens.
More kid friendly.
That's
more
true. I agree.
They were still doing Slim Pickens stuff pretty good during the 70s.
Slim Pickens was probably best. He's best suited for Mel Brooks movies. That's where he belongs. Yeah. Make him a cowboy in freaking Blazing Saddles. He's amazing in that. Like, there's a place for Slim Pickens. It ain't here. This is not it.
I was so ready for him to say, what in the wide world of sports is going on here?
Yeah. Like I said, I think it was just that old guard kind of trying to relate to kids and what was funny to them. And I'm sure Slim Pickens was funny to them back when things were funny.
Yeah, I guess so. How old is he? He's dead, right? He's not alive.
He's got to be dead by now.
No, he's still in that black hole. What are you talking about?
Slim Pickens. I just got to find out.
Yeah.
Slim Pickings.
Pickings.
Wait,
Slim Pickings over here.
Pickens. There we go.
He passed away in 1983.
Oh,
wow.
A couple years after this.
Yeah. Oh, geez. Yeah. How old was he when he died?
64.
That's a little young, isn't it? A little young.
Wow, born in 1919. Oh, I mean, Neil Peart just passed away. He was just, 62?
69.
Just passed away yesterday?
60, yeah, Neil Peart died. Hold on.
Drummer for Rush.
He had a nice run on BJ and the Bear as Sergeant Beauregard Wiley.
What?
Before he passed away, yeah.
Yeah, not Neil Peart. He's talking about.
No, we... Yeah. he's back there with his drums going. Yeah.
Big giant drum circle. Yeah, he was 67, Neil Peart. Just died. Right. I don't know why that one got me so bad. Rush was a huge part of my growing up, and he was the drummer, man. That was the guy.
He was the guy.
And
I didn't know he had brain cancer, so that was kind of kind of shocked me.
They kept it to themselves, and he was notoriously private. Like, that's the other thing, is he, even in their craziest years, he would like stay in separate hotels and ride his motorcycle instead of driving in the bus or flying in the plane or whatever. Like, that guy liked his privacy. So I think that was another example of he died literally with his privacy, which is kind of cool. Mm-hmm. But he was amazing. My gosh, that guy.
Oh, yeah.
Just big circle of drums and turning upside down. And
I
mean, as much as we all got sick of hearing Tom Sawyer over and over, the drum solo in Tom Sawyer when he'd do it live was like mind-altering. Oh, my gosh. Anyway.
By the way, one more real quick thing about Slim Pickens. Back over to Slim Pickens. Played a sheriff about 20 times in his career.
Yeah. A bumbling sheriff at that.
What was he in? Can you tell me what he was in The Stand? He was in The Stand miniseries back in the early 90s, I think. Or it may have been the last thing he did. Am I thinking of the wrong thing?
You might be thinking of the wrong person, because he died in 83.
Yeah.
Hold on. Let's see. Who am I thinking of?
Fat Pickens. His cousin.
Oh, you're such a dork. All right, 94. I'm gonna look this up. It said Gary Sinise, Molly Ringwurm.
Did you say Molly Ringwurm?
I did. That's sorry. Sorry. I've always done it. I can't help it. It just came out. I swear he was in this. What am I thinking of?
I don't know.
All right,
Ray Walston.
No. I don't know what I'm thinking of. I hate when I do that. I've conflated him with something else. or it's
just mixing him up with Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. It happens.
It happens. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. Oh, did I have a final?
What clip? If you're mixing him up with Stephen King himself? He was in that series.
I might have. You never know. Did he say, I'm wondering what in tarnation is it going on here or any of that?
Tom?
Wait. I sent you boys to get some track laid. I cannot finish that quote. I just realized there's a word coming up that I'm not going to say.
Yeah. Saw that coming down the road. Turned corner. It's fine. Here's a really bad yell. I think this was Robert Forrester, supposed to be him yelling while they were going through the black hole and everything's getting all twisty. So here's that.
He's dead.
We're dead. We're dead.
Oh, that was the echo.
Mm-hmm.
He's dead, Jim. He's dead.
He's dead.
The most useless waste of 10 minutes of celluloid. Just like,
would
all right, let's just have echo
zoom in.
Would you be
surprised
if I
told you
it was
only 15 seconds?
It felt longer than that.
It felt like it was at least 3 minutes. I would say, right. I guarantee it's longer than 3 minutes. But it, I wouldn't know.
It has to be longer. It's got to be. It was long.
I'm gonna time it right now.
You should watch it and time it and tell us, because I felt like it was over long. And if it's not that long, let's say it's only a minute and 15 seconds, that's right. Still too long, because it made it feel 20 minutes. It was bad. All right. That's it for that. Let's move on to this now, which if I could find it would be great. Here it is. This just handed to me, the Film Sack checklist, the worst robot eyes in the history of filmmaking. Check.
No.
They're bad, dude. They're bad. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Charlie is annoying. Check. And then finally, Anthony Perkins really gets to the heart of things. Check. Get it? Because his heart was grinding out.
Yep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's the joke there. All right. Star Trek Connections. This came from Daryl. It's kind of a weird one. But anyway, Roddy McDowall was the original choice for Trelawney in TOS's episode, The Squire of Gothos. So he didn't really make it in there. So I don't know why it's a connection, but it was a near connection. They said the reason they didn't do it is because they said the character combined with McDowell's look would have made the character appear gay, and they couldn't have any of that in the 60s. William Campbell was chosen because his huskier look and build would offset the foppish mannerisms of the character. He was also the preferred choice of the voice of Armus in TNG's Skin of Evil in 1988. So that's as close as we get to a true connection. There may have been some other stuff, but Daryl did not find it. Star Trek A, to give it an E for excellent. I thought it was very good. It holds up. There are, Randy's not wrong, there's points where it's just over, it's ridiculous. Yeah.
It's like, oh, they recorded some really great, really loud music. Let's just put it here.
Yeah.
And you're like, but that's a quiet moment. Why are you doing this to me?
Definitely a problem, for sure. But the music itself, and if you listen to it on its own, what's his name? Daniel. He's known for good orchestral scores, and this is, I think, one of them. So well done to that guy.
58 seconds.
Really? That's how long the repetition and zooms in and
yep.
That felt
like
so
three
much
times
longer.
That, right?
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, like I said, I would have bet on 3 minutes at least.
Yeah.
And I just want to rewind 1 minute. Daniel, what? This is a John Barry score. Right?
Oh, sorry, John. Yes, I'm thinking of the director's name. I think.
Oh, okay.
I'm confusing everybody's name.
James Bond. Score.
Oh yeah,
writer, John Barry.
Yeah, a bunch of James Bond stuff.
Yeah,
looking
he's good.
Through my collection, it's hard to say what my like best John Barry is, but I definitely listened to Dances with Wolves the most.
Hmm. Oh. Would you guys like to come over and listen to my John Barry?
The director is Gary Nelson. I don't know where I got Daniel from. I don't know where that came from. It's probably a Slim Pickens movie.
I
can't remember.
He was the guy in The Stand who sounds a lot like Slim Pickens.
There you go. Finally, I can make sense of this. All right, it's time for the Twitter post. Oh, go ahead. What?
I was just going to say, John Barry is long gone. He did a score for a movie called Mercury Rising. His career that was real good.
Yeah.
I remember that.
I remember liking Mercury Rising.
Did we watch that for a film sec?
It's
so familiar.
Bruce Willis, Alec Baldwin. Yeah.
Did we?
I really liked it at the time. I cannot say how it held up.
All right. Maybe it'll come up on Film Sex.
Well, you guys, I finally figured out the best Alec Baldwin role of all time. I figured it out. I rewatched The Departed, and his role in that is maybe the best thing he ever did.
Yes, but what about 30 Rock?
I mean, that was movie-wise. TV show, absolutely. Right. Yeah, absolutely with you there on TV. But
I was trying to think of this because I heard an interview with him on Howard Stern. What was the movie where he was like a played completely straight military sergeant or something?
Is it Hunt for Red October?
Daughter?
Not Hunt for Red October.
Recent.
Oh, recent.
Recent Alec Baldwin.
Oh,
yeah.
I don't know.
I thought you were going to eventually land on the Hunt for Red October. Hold on. Let's see. recent. I have no idea.
Yeah, I'm having to look it up because it was driving me nuts. I was trying to think of what it was.
She's driving me nuts.
He was good in he's good in lots of stuff, but let me look here.
Oh, wasn't he somebody's military boss in Pearl Harbor?
That was it, yes. And he played it completely straight and didn't like it wasn't kind of hammed up. He sometimes does hammed up and
we just watched that like a year ago.
That's what I was thinking of. Yeah, that's exactly what it was.
He was also good in Mission Impossible Fallout, which came out last year. He's very good in that. Mm-hmm. Well, a year before last. Was he in Black Klansman? I didn't know that.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
Anyway, sorry. That's great.
You got stuck into the black hole of
Alec Baldwin. Yeah. The furry, the very shaggy furry black hole of Alec Baldwin.
Better than the black hole of Stephen Baldwin. All right, moving on.
Well, agreed.
Here's the Star Trek, the Twitter post. This is where in 280 characters or less, you three say what you think about this movie. Let's start with Randy.
The black hole. Really loud music playing while a whole lot of brain dead people wearing masks and cloaks try to lay hands on you just like a Saturday night at Overtime.
And we're back.
2020, baby. Woo! Brian Dunaway.
Oh, the black hole. WTF. How is that an ending? Oh, wait. I'm getting an ESP. Extra spicy poop.
Oh, wow.
That's not a happy ending. That's a rough ending. Finally, Brian Ibbett.
The black hole. Like most things without a good ending, this film...
Yeah, nice.
Even better.
Nice. That was perfectly... paused. Well
thank
done.
You. Thank you.
This is exciting. I didn't know this. Look at this. Alternate titles. This was almost called The Dumb Hole or Anthony Perkins Has No Heart. I used that joke twice. All right, moving on.
Okay.
emails. We got an email from a listener. Thomas in Missouri wrote this in. He says, hello, Scott, Brian, and Randy. Hi, guys. I've really been enjoying the show, and I had a few suggestions for movies you could watch. Unfortunately, none of them are on services you usually watch, but maybe you could give them a try or at least put them on our list. Let's see. First, there is Phantom of the Paradise of Brian De Palma starring Paul Williams. This is a weird one. It includes a lot of musical performances and strange imagery. It's on Shudder right now.
Is it Phantom of the Paradise or Phantom of the Paradise of the Brian De Palma?
It literally says Phantom of the Paradise. Oh, he wrote it weird. Oh. It's Phantom. He just didn't put by. So it's Phantom of the Paradise. Okay. A Brian De Palma film is what that is. It's some old Brian De Palma movie. But Williams. That's
Paul
funny.
Williams, Jessica Harper.
I thought the whole title had Brian De Palma in it.
It would be great.
I was wondering.
Boy, yeah, this is
like a John Malkovich.
A disfigured composer sells his soul for the woman he loves so that she will perform his music. However, an evil record tycoon betrays him and steals his music to open his rock palace, The Paradise.
His rock palace.
I want to see this now. I'm down.
All right. Well, that'll go on a list. Also, we have second. Here's one. It's called Quick Change, a really funny movie with Bill Murray, Gina Davis, Randy Quaid. It's about a bank heist that is really fun to watch. The jousting scene alone is worth it.
One of my favorite Bill Murray films ever.
That's right.
It's on our list that I check almost every week for if these movies go streaming, we will definitely sack.
He says this one's currently on Vudu and free, but has ads. So we could consider that, I suppose. And then you got the last but not least, Rubber. Says this is a weird one. Oh, this is that tire one, isn't it?
The tire one. Yep. Yeah.
Didn't we show? We showed this at Nerdtacular as a joke for something.
Right.
I don't remember what I did. for a film sack, and I don't know what the joke was, but we showed a trailer for Rubber, I think. Anyway, says this is a weird one, really weird, like super, super weird. It's about a tire. That is all I'll say. It's on Hoopla, the free service that is connected to public libraries. We see that one. Wow, that's great. Just helping the education of our children. Public libraries. Wonderful.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, Brian, what the hell is that? The Phantom of the
that
Paradise.
That is from Phantom of the Paradise that photo I just put in our Discord.
Is that Brian Brian Williams? Paul Williams in there?
No, I think this is the guy that I think it might be William Finley because he plays the Phantom, and I'm guessing that that's what the Phantom looks like.
I feel like it's what's his name? Who's
Tim Curry?
No, that's good too. But I'm thinking of the singer. I can't think. Oh, Marilyn Manson's who I'm thinking of.
Oh yeah, yeah, it is very Marilyn Manson.
Like at a
yeah.
concert or something. With his makeup, because without his makeup, Marilyn Manson looks like a potato. He really does. Anyway, he says, I think all these movies would be great episodes of Film Sack. I hope to hear them someday. Keep up the awesome work, guys. Thomas from Missouri. Well, thank you, Thomas.
God, I love Quick Change. It is one of my favorite, not just one of my favorite Bill Murray movies, but one of my favorite movies, underappreciated films. Randy Quaid's great in it. Gina Davis is great in it.
Never saw it, so I would love to see it.
It has a way of pacing and creating atmosphere that you just don't often find in dark comedies. Like, dark comedies tend to live and die on the script, and this one has things for you to look at. I love it.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm into it. Plus, we haven't done a comedy in a while, so that might be a good one to do. Because they're hard, you know? We don't usually do those here, but...
It's harder to do for a film sack, you're right.
Yeah. But a Bill Murray film with all of that talk around it, Randy Quaid, where he's at in his life now, like, there's a lot to say.
Oh, geez. Yeah.
Gina Davis and so on. That's going to do it for your emails. Thank you for those. You can send them to filmsack@gmail.com, or you can leave us voicemails at 801-471-0462. Make 2020 the year of voicemails. I have a few backed up. I'll play those soon. I just got to get them prepped. Filmsack.com is... Oh, what's our next movie? Forgot.
Oh, that would be The Mask of Zorro.
The Mask of Zorro. Antonio. Wait, I want to hear the way Randy says it. But say his name.
Antonio Banderas.
Ah, yeah, wow. Dude. Woo. I know. Give
makes
me a
me
shiver.
Feel warm inside.
Yeah. Got a little semi erection from it. Not really. So that movie I saw in theaters with my family forever ago. I don't remember a thing about it, but it's Antonio Banderas and then what's her name?
Catherine Zeta-Jones.
Yeah, and wasn't this her first real on-the-scene business? Like, this was her big breakout, I think. So,
sure. The only thing I remember is I said earlier that it was a train, but I believe it was a stagecoach that explodes. That's the only thing I remember about this movie.
Oh, I thought you said it was a horse.
Yeah, you said a horse exploded.
I did say it was a horse that exploded next to a train, because I thought he had, like, dynamite on it. But the more I thought about it, I was like, it seemed like it was a stagecoach. And it seems like... The horse is still exploded, but it was because the stagecoach. But I couldn't remember.
Well, that's all right.
I don't want to watch it now. I wanted to watch it when the horse exploded. Now,
well, then you believe it.
Yeah. Our entire choice to watch this movie was based on this lie about a horse exploding.
Right.
So
it was definitely a horse that went up in flames. Definitely.
All right. Okay. I'm excited to find out. And to find out next week with us when we watch Mask of Zorro. This is the first Zorro movie, and this is streaming where, Randy?
Netflix.
Good deal. back to Netflix. And by the way, we are not opposed to making Disney Plus a regular place for select things. We haven't done a ton of homework over there yet to see kind of what you know, what all the ancient stuff looks like, but there's a lot of it. Yeah. And
hard to want to sack the Apple Dumpling Gang or something like that.
Yeah, those would be like, weird to do.
We would be like an hour and a half of Slim Pickens humor, you think, maybe?
I think it would be, yeah.
Probably, yeah. But like, you know, the Shaggy D.A. might have some legs, or a really old, like, tennis shoes wore, or the computer wore tennis shoes.
Did they remake that Shaggy D.A. with Tim Allen?
I think so. They remade a lot of those, right? With Nutty Professor and Shaggy D.A. and Flubber and stuff like that, so.
Let's see, Shaggy D.A. Yeah, there was the 76 one, which is the one I know. And then there was some new thing. I thought it was Steve Carell, but I'm thinking of something else.
You might be right. I can't remember.
Doesn't that seem right, though, that it would be Steve Carell? Like, if you're going to hire somebody?
Right. No.
Never seems right. He's great. There's nothing wrong with Steve Carell. He's fine. You're not a Steve Carell fan there, Randy?
Not in that.
Oh,
no.
Okay. All right. Well, there you go. That's our plan. We're going to do that next week. In the meantime, if you're looking for our website, archives of the show, current stuff, whatever, it's all over at filmsack.com. And we'd recommend you head over there and check that out. Episode 500 is looming. When it does loom large, we're going to be pushing a brand new commemorative 500 episode mug for the show.
Mugging.
Yep, that'll be very cool. I'm excited about it. More jealously for all of us getting our own version of the mug, but also I hope many of you want it as well. Anyway, that's coming up soon, so watch for that. Oh, it's Tim Allen. You're right. Totally Tim Allen.
Yeah, and it was the Shaggy Dog. Yeah, I don't know if it's right. Actually a DA or not.
And that was 20. Ooh, they gave that based dog his eyes. He has his eyes.
Yeah, that's creepy.
I don't like that. That's
totally creepy.
It's like cats, but yeah. With a dog.
With a shaggy dog.
Not
with Tim
cool.
Allen.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Okay, so this is interesting history. 1959 was the Shaggy Dog. The right. Shaggy DA was a 1976 pseudo sort of sequel. Hey, here's another take on this. That's the only one I've ever seen is the Shaggy DA. And it's got that guy from Eight Is Enough in it.
Right.
The bald dad.
Dick Patton.
Van Patten. There you go. Mm-hmm. I almost said Dyke. So I'm glad you.
Mm-hmm. No one the other Dick Van.
Yes. And no one should say Dyke without context. Okay. Right. Don't just blurt out Dyke in mixed company. All right. That's going to do it for the show. Thank you all for being here. We appreciate it. Oh, find us on Twitter as well and leave us reviews wherever you get your podcasts. That'd be nice too. It's going to do it for us, for me, for Randy. Nope. Let's start that over. It's 2020, baby. It's for me, for Brian, and for Randy.
Cuckoo as a Swiss clock.
We'll see you next time. This show is part of the Frog Pants Network.
Frog Pants Network.
Get more shows like this at frogpants.com.
Sifitho. So Sifitho, yeah, that golden droid.